continued to smolder on the fence. Farther along, the friends saw their first sec man patrolling the inside of the compound. He was armed with a long blaster and wore a good pair of boots. Behind the sec man, about 30 people worked a row of trees, pulling weeds, trimming branches, and picking fruit. They all looked to be healthy and well-fed. A few of the women looked to be pregnant, but they were still able to help with the farm work. Within a few minutes of the friend's appearance, the first sec man was joined by a second, who came riding up in a small black wag that had an engine that ran without making a sound. There was a heavy blaster set up on a swivel mount on the back of the wag that gave the weapon a 360-degree radius of fire. The first sec man waved to the friends as they walked along the outside of the fence. Ryan returned the wave, and the others followed suit. But while the first sec man remained where he was, overseeing the workers, the second sec man in the black mini-wag matched their pace, following them all the way to the farm's front gate. Mildred read the sign over the double steel gate that served as the farm's front entrance.
Fox Farm.
There was a kiosk just inside the gate where a sec man was on duty. The mobile sec man pulled up to the gate, then climbed out of the small black wag. His blue uniform contrasted with the rest of the guards, so Ryan guessed he was the sec chief. He was joined by several other sec men, all carrying blasters of different makes and models, but presumably all in good working order and fully loaded.
Greetings, Outlanders. What brings you to Fox Farm?
We're just passing through.
Well, you're welcome to spend the night here if you'd like. We have some excellent accommodations.
That was out of the question, of course. The electrified fence was probably just as good at keeping people in as it was at keeping things out. If they stepped through the gate, they might never leave. When Ryan said nothing in response to the sec man's offer, Mildred piped in.
How much would it cost us?
The sec man smiled.
Oh, one of your blasters, perhaps, or some ammunition.
Thanks for the offer, but I'm afraid we need our blasters and ammo. You know, home protection while on the road.
Ryan motioned for his companions to turn and leave.
Fair enough, but I can't let you go.
The friends all made subtle moves for their blasters.
Without making some sort of trade. How about some food? Apples, pears, grapes, beans? I'm sure you have something of value we could exchange.
The mention of food immediately stopped the Outlanders in their tracks. Dean quickly produced an extra pocket knife. Jack searched his pockets and came up with a few rounds that didn't fit any of the friends' blasters. Christy offered up one of her two combs, and Mildred decided she could part with a pair of socks. Ryan and the others held up the goods for inspection.
Sorry for the slim pickings, but we tend to travel light.
Not to worry. These are all things we can make use of.
He turned to one of the sec men behind him.
Get three bags.
The sec man hopped into the black mini-wag and drove up to a large building to the left of the gate. In less than a minute, he came back with three bags filled with fresh fruit and vegetables.
By the horn of the goat Amalthea, I never thought I'd live to see a cornucopia such as this.
Fair trade.
It was more than fair, Ryan thought, which made him suspicious. In his experience, all traders wanted to come out on top in a deal. These people either had far more food than they needed, even for trade, or they were after something else. But judging by how prosperous the farm looked, Ryan decided they could probably afford to be generous with their food, as a sign of goodwill, with an eye toward future trades of more valuable commodities.
Fair trade.
A sec man opened a small door in the gate at chest height, and the goods were passed through the opening.
It's been a pleasure doing business with you all.
Ryan nodded. J.B., Doc, and Christy each took a bag, but no one grabbed a fruit, knowing they should keep their hands as free as possible in case something went wrong and they had to grab their blasters. But the small door closed without incident, and the deal was done.
How far is the ville from here?
The sec man pointed south.
Oh, just down the road. Hardly any people there, but plenty of places to spend the night.
Thanks for the info.
They were about to leave when J.B. stepped forward.
If you don't mind me asking, where are you getting your electricity?
Oh, it's no secret. Power station at the Falls has been making juice for more than 200 years.
The Falls? You mean Niagara Falls?
That's them.
Thanks again for the trade, but we'd best get moving if we want to get to this ville by dark.
Perhaps we'll see you again sometime.
Ryan nodded.
Perhaps.
The friends headed for the falls, Mildred and Dean covering the rear until they were out of range of the Sekhmen's long blasters. When the outlanders were almost out of sight, Baron Fox came down from his office and strolled out to the main gate to meet with Grundwald. The Sek chief had ordered the others in his team to continue trailing the outlanders while he made his report to the Baron. He would catch up to them later. The Baron arrived at the gate wearing his familiar silk bathrobe, but now had a heavy pair of black leather boots on his feet. He took his pipe from a pocket in his bathrobe, filled it with some of the tobacco grown on the farm, and lit it with a shiny chrome Zippo lighter, which had cost him a breeder. As always, Norman Bower was several paces behind the Baron, his ledger tucked neatly up under his right arm.
"The one-eyed man's their leader."
Fox chugged a few times on his pipe.
"Yes, he seemed to do all the talking for the group."
"Oh, he's good with a blaster, too."
"As they all are, no doubt."
"It would make it hard for me to take them without losing a lot of my men."
Fox grew angry with the Sek chief. The red-headed one was exotic, and her hair was the most beautiful he'd ever seen. Even if she never got heavy, he knew a rich baron or two living outside the Easternvilles who'd pay Big Jack to make a wig or weave out of hair like that. And the dark woman had the best set of breeding hips he'd seen in months. But whatever happened, he desperately wanted to fulfill his fantasies with at least one of them.
"Sekhmen I can get anywhere. I need breeders."
"Yes, sir. What do you want me to do, then?"
Fox blew a plume of gray smoke just under Grundwald's nose.
"I want you to bring them here. Bring me the women. Whatever it takes."
Grundwald nodded and looked down the road toward the falls.
"What did you give them?"
"3 bags of fruit in exchange for some trinkets."
"It wasn't just fruit in those bags, I'm hoping, if you get my drift."
"Most of the fruit is laced with sedatives. We didn't have time to prepare the fruit in all 3 bags, but there's a good mix. Should be enough to put a few of them off guard. That's all the advantage we'll need."
"Excellent. I'll send the wag to the tower after dark."
Normally, the Sek chief would have a wag at his disposal, but that damned slave Clarissa had recently stolen one in an escape, and they hadn't been able to trade for a replacement yet. That made the second wag even more valuable, and the Baron only wanted to let it outside the complex long enough to collect the new breeders and bring them back to the farm. The Sek chief nodded.
"We'll bring them back."
He started down the road double time to catch up with the rest of his men.
"You'd better."
Mildred pondered what the Sek chief had told them as the friends walked along the road toward the ville that was now less than a mile away.
"It all makes sense now. The region around Niagara Falls was all farmland. Apple orchards, pears, plums, peaches, and plenty of grapes for making some really good wine."
"No more, though."
"Not after the blast. The whole area was wiped out, except for that one farm."
"In my day, Niagara Falls was the site of some of the most exciting theoretical discussion about the possibilities of electricity, not to mention the incredible feat of engineering that would be required to make it possible."
"Electricity would sure give the Baron or whoever owns the farm one hell of an advantage."
"Like fuel?"
"Better than fuel. It's harder to steal. No one can blow it up, and it doesn't have to be refined. It could give them lights, even the power to pump fresh water."
"So why hasn't the rest of the area prospered? If there's power here, why is the ville empty?"
"After 100 years, the power station can't be producing all that much electricity."
"He probably takes everything the station produces, or destroyed all the power lines except for those running to his farm."
"I must say, the people working on the farm looked healthy enough. They must all be doing well for themselves."
Jack lifted the bag of fruit.
"And for the traders."
Brian had to admit that the farm looked like a well-run operation. But there was still something about it that bothered him. The electrified fence was a logical defense system, considering the type of muties that lurked in the area and the amount of electricity that was available. Still, it seemed to be run a little too smoothly for it to be just a farm, and he'd never seen a farm that was so well armed.
"You know, there's another thing that Niagara Falls was known for in pre-dark times."
"What's that?"
"It was the honeymoon capital of North America."
"What's that mean?"
"It means that after people got married, they'd come here to, celebrate by spending a lot of time in bed together."
"Oh, so that's why the Sekhmen said there were plenty of places to spend the night here."
JB smiled.
"Good. I could use a good night's rest."
"Not up to a little honeymoon, John?"
Oh, I'll be up for it.
At that moment, they crested a rise in the road, and suddenly Fallsville and the lake beyond it stretched out before them. There were dozens of buildings around the ville that had been destroyed by the shock waves from the initial nuke blasts, or the aftershocks that followed. But despite the damage, they were